Welcome to Creative Direction. This podcast was created to celebrate the courage it takes to become an entrepreneur. And we discover how working artists and creatives are making their way. As entrepreneurs, many of us had the desire, but not the roadmap. Creative Direction is meant to explore the diverse voices and approaches to working and making a living. It is our hope that this podcast helps provide some insights that might aid you on your own creative journey. I'm excited to welcome my co-host for this episode, Elijah Teague. He is also our producer and editor. Welcome to Creative Direction. Gretchen, we're so excited to have you here today. And like so many of our guests, you've forged your own path and do so many things. It's really difficult to know what you do. You have been a consultant, a teacher, a thought leader, and our very influential design community. You were on a team that designed the iconic Aeron chair for Herman Miller, the chair that I'm actually sitting in right now.
Yes, me too.
I need one. Where's mine?
I don't really. Yeah, well, you got to earn it, buddy.
Okay.
Get that job.
But, I'm actually in a knockoff from Herman Miller right now.
Are you? Ooh, shame. Shame, Elijah.
I think it's an IKEA one.
The authentics would make a great graduation gift.
Yes, I'm going to tell my mom that.
Man. Well, I'll save my pennies. Elijah, you need to career for early semester. So, I don't know. I mean, I guess a good place to begin is how would you describe yourself? I feel like I didn't do it justice.
You know, it's hard to articulate because, as you pointed out, there is such you know, a tree of branches out here that I have done professionally. I would say, you know, right now I think the all-encompassing is I'm a leader in the business of design. And so those are a couple of terms that we were just chatting about with Elijah as he begins his career. And design with the focus on the business side of things. So I've never been, you know, the author of a product design per se. Part of it is I worked in a process that was always a team-based design process, but there were design authors within there. So, you know, I am trying to help find disruptive innovation opportunities today. And cool. And that can lead to new revenue, which is the business side of things. It can lead to differentiation. It can lead to intellectual property. All that stuff on the business side of design, as I touched on earlier. But you know, how you get there is a process of discovery, and some of it is finding the white space opportunities. Some of it is, you know, trying to or identifying, frankly, where there are opportunities to improve a stakeholder's experience. And it all comes together in this tight wad of design and design thinking and problem solving.
Yeah, so you would it be fair to say that you apply your kind of design lens to these companies and help them move forward, whether it's diversifying, I mean, I'm saying what you said again, but diversifying their product lines or figuring out a new solution of something they can do. Is that getting close to your world?
So maybe if I touch on, you know, some of the consulting projects that I've had over the last year, that helps explain some things. So I've been advising the startup, the founders of a couple of different startups. They happen to be in furniture land. One of them is quite far along in their own maturation. So they have products that they have introduced to the marketplace, and yet there are some very recent product introductions. And where I've helped them is some of that thought leadership that you touched on earlier. So doing some blogging for them, but also making some connections. So one of them is a company based out of Portland and Portland, Oregon, I should say. And Portland, you know, is in the midst of timber country, and they're very rightfully proud of that. So with their wood elements in their product line, they were hoping to, frankly, deliver entirely made in Oregon products. And, you know, when they take together the costs of the different components, they layer in where they need to be margin wise, where they need to be to satisfy and draw the customer in, there was a chasm there. So it's like, oh, maybe we can't afford to be entirely made in Oregon because those three factors aren't adding up appropriately. So maybe let's back down a little bit from that and see, for example, gosh, is there a supplier of component X, Y, or Z that we can in fact leverage to close that chasm? So that's one thing that I'm doing. And also when I walk in and check out their prototypes, you know, startups move very fast, and that's one of their key differentiators compared to the big behemoths like I worked at Herman Miller. And yet I think that speed, you can overlook some things. So I can remember, I think it was like right at a year ago this week that I was last out in Portland and walked into their prototypes, and it's like, why am I looking up and seeing screw heads? I don't want to see screw heads. You know, that's interrupting that line of that steel frame. And furthermore, you aren't taking advantage of, you know, gravity up there. And they're like, oh, didn't even think about that. We're so close to things. So that's where I think, you know, being a fresh set of eyes as a consultant that kind of does the drive-by in a way, in handy. So that's just one of my gigs. Second gig has been with a much earlier startup who is, you know, going for Series A funding and frankly incorporation here very soon. And, you know, they're just trying to gain a foothold, and, you know, they were similarly moving fast and had all sorts of ideas that I helped bring together and create at least the first draft of their value proposition and messaging and how to tell that story that they will then take in front of potential investors and get them going, get them a good platform. If that's in the startup world, I've also been very fortunate to have an established organization amongst my customer base, and they were looking to add revenue streams to their existing offerings. So they have one specialty in the world of laboratory furniture specifically, case goods and fume hoods and the true furniture side of things. And they were hoping to add a strategic partner that manufactures seating that is appropriate for laboratory environments. And, you know, they know that I know my seating, case in point here. And yet we recognized very clearly that frankly, the not necessarily the constraints, but the criteria for success in the laboratory environment has some different elements to it. So cleanability being key.
Yeah.
But also with so much of the work surface being at counter height, they really needed to make sure that they were also being presented with stool versions and chairs to complement those. So they hired me to go out, find, vet, and onboard a strategic partner for them in this product area. And so that's what all I've been doing that has been having some cash flowing into my little business as I get started over the last year. And as I look ahead, you know, there are other things, and I know we'll talk about them in the course of this conversation, but, you know, leverage what I've done in these, in this long history at Herman Miller and these other furniture organizations, and recognize that the process is entirely the same regardless of the industry. So I'm anxious to, you know, whether it be a step or a stretch or frankly more of a leap, looking for expansion here.
Yeah, so you're helping companies literally with nuts and bolts to like the bigger idea that they need help with, kind of get things done, and you're connecting people based on your expertise. But I think everyone could use a Gretchen in their life. So like, hey, what did I forget here? Or also, hey, where do I even begin? Have someone like that is like, that's awesome.
Yeah. And frankly, that's one of the conversations that I am having with another company that could be one of those steps or the stretches. You know, the leader, as I understand it, has been recognizing for some time that, gosh, you know, they've trusted their guts, and their guts are grounded in 30 years of experience within their particular industry. And gosh, you know, there's been a lot of good luck and good fortune coupled there. And yet they've never really onboarded anyone from an innovation side of things. And yet it's like, oh gosh, what does that even look like? It's like, well, let's just have a conversation and we'll do a little bit of discovery together, and can be really, really confined or, and hopefully grow from there. Or yeah, some places do start broad and wide.
Yeah. So when I talked to Elijah, and actually we've talked to a lot of our other guests about this, about being an entrepreneur, opening a business, you know, we often talk about it as like a stair step sort of thing, you know, and you seem to be someone to help people reaching for that next stair, whether or not they know what that is and have to define it, or they need someone to tell them what to do.
Yeah.
And get in there. That's pretty fascinating. I mean, you've obviously had some significant success and have great ideas. You've been around and just crushing it. So what, that's all very serious, but I think one of the things that I thought was interesting in your profiles, I mean, obviously we know each other personally, but one of the things I was like really interested in asking you about is this importance of the return to playfulness. How does that kind of interweave into some of these very like serious questions that you're answering or helping to answer or even asking these companies?
Yeah, you know, I would say I'm definitely finding my way through it with the customers, but some of it is just, you know, frankly, relationship building doesn't always happen by way of the buttoned up business conversations. You know, unfortunately, we're in a stage right now where it's a lot harder to break bread together. So, but you know, you can introduce a smile, you can introduce a little joke, a little levity, frankly, in the whole process that I think goes a long way to building connections. And I would say, you know, the playfulness is definitely something that I lost over time, and not deliberately, but you know, you get sucked into some very interesting things that demand a lot of focus and a lot of your time, and it's kind of the frog in the boiling water scenario, or I guess the frog that is in the water that gets the water boiling in time and you don't even notice it. But just honestly, when I think of the pool of really top rate mentors that I have had over the years that I've been blessed to have, unfortunately, I've lost three of them over time, and they were all in their unique ways, just dedicated to having a good time, having fun with what you're doing. And one of my mentors who is still around, is a truthful story. I can remember when I worked for him 25 to 27 years ago, he would be on the road literally the first 4 days of the week. And I would walk in on Friday morning to the office at, you know, by 8:15 a.m. and he was already holed up on a conference call that would last for 2 hours, and he'd be in this tiny, tiny cell of an enclosed office because SEC requirements were such that at his level he needed a door and four walls, and you know, we'd hear him rumbling around, and then he'd come storming out of there and he'd be ready to go to the next appointment, and he would literally have a briefcase in each hand. And yet he took that moment, like I was just talking about a moment ago. He's like, how you doing? Good morning. You know, he interacted with you as a person. And he always asked the question, are you having fun? And I can tell you to this day that if there was ever any semblance of no to my answer that he heard, those briefcases were dropped on the spot. He would pick up the phone, call his EA and say, whatever I'm going to next, reschedule it. Gretchen needs me. And Gretchen needs me now.
Holy smokes.
And honestly, you know, it chokes me up to say this, but he has been there for me in those exact respects over time. When, you know, if I think back 13, 14 years ago, where again, circumstances built up and it's like, I wasn't having fun. And I made that very clear to friends and family, and they were all supportive in their own way. Mm. And it's like, you know, but this is business stuff and I need to go talk to Andy. And Andy was accessible, but Andy was in Philadelphia. And it's like, you know what, hop on the plane, go sit down with him. And, you know, he gave me his undivided attention, as I recall, for an entire afternoon. And, you know, was a great ear. Did a lot of listening and a lot of encouraging and, you know, set me back on the right course. So, but there was always that undercurrent. And frankly, to this day, I still see him. And regardless of whatever circumstances we're seeing, we haven't seen one another at a funeral. So I don't know if he would ask it there, but.
That's good.
Depends
on what kind of funeral it is, right?
Any circumstance we've seen one another for whatever duration of time, the question is always asked, are you having fun?
Wow. That's great.
So yeah, that's where I'm able to say things are very different than they were, you know, when I had a full-time role with a huge responsibility at Herman Miller. That was fun in a way, but I'm in a very, very different and solid base of fun right now.
Yeah, it's probably, do you find yourself, you know, when you're working on Herman Miller, you have like a longer term projects and there's a lot more money at stake. There's probably a lot of less flexibility as far as being able to really flex that let's blow it up muscle, right? You know, like let's totally flip this thing upside down, turn around. You can flip it maybe on its side and then poke it a little bit, but you can't like really get in there and shake things up aggressively just because there's so much more people involved, right?
Yeah.
Do you find that to be true, or am I out of
to a degree? I would say yes, absolutely. So much more people involved, and frankly, some of them at Herman Miller, by way of consulting arrangements, the provocateurs were often external to the company in terms of not being on the payroll, but you know, contracted for various projects, and so you know that was often. The ear that you know got the horse going, shall we say. So it was different being on the inside, but you know, once you got, I don't know, I guess I'm going with a horse analogy here for whatever once the gate is open, then you know you could go gangbusters, but you were doing it as a team, and some of that is consensus and some of that is compromise, but also working together with team members for a long haul that not necessarily groupthink, but you know you get in tune with these folks, and although we have different perspectives, often we're driving cohesively toward the same point.
Yeah, it's you know, if you know you're going to work with or gonna see Kathy by the water cooler, you know, you're not gonna want to upset the apple cart too much, you know, like that's just a that group environment that you're kind of talking about too. It's not a bad thing, you know, that's how some of the best work gets made because you have this group of people with these incredibly high standards.
Absolutely.
You know, it's just different. It's a different type of fun, like you said earlier. You know, now you've got these upstarts and some other people that are just like, how do I do this? Where do I even begin? What do I even do? And you're like, you're like, I've got three ideas for you. They're all great, but let's pick one. Let's figure it out. Yeah, it's a different conversation.
Very right? much so.
Yep. So like, do we all agree this is an airplane? Yep, it's an airplane.
It flies anyway.
Yeah. See you Monday. We got deep into our analogies here. Sorry, Elisha.
No, just before we, I definitely have a lot more questions about Herb Miller and your experience and your projects that you're working on now. But I was hoping that you could just talk a little bit about your early career and kind of, I know you went to U of I, is that correct? So can you just talk about like what you're doing before, like maybe in high school a little bit, what you're doing at U of I, and then kind of how you even got into Herb Miller in the first place?
Absolutely. So I think one part that you didn't ask about explicitly, but it is important to the story.
Yes, please.
Not to the degree of like, you know, growing up in a mid-century modern house or anything like that, but there were elements of design in my upbringing. My dad was a high school industrial arts teacher. That was his vocation, but he also made all sorts of things out of wood and was constantly challenging himself and really striving for beauty in various objects. And so that's part of my family tree. And I know that he also got it from his mother in particular, who had what I'll call an eye for design. And it's my understanding, for all intents and purposes, that one of her brothers was the first industrial designer in our family. Back in their hometown in Germany, he worked for a company called WMF, which is a German tableware manufacturer headquartered in their hometown. And he worked for them for literally like 58 years.
Wow.
A range of different roles, and one of the pieces of stainless steel that I have in the other room is one that Uncle Georg designed. So so that was always there, and yet I can also jump specifically to when I was 12, and I've written about this a little bit in some LinkedIn posts. But in terms of my design sparks, it was my grandparents coming back from one of those visits to Germany when I was 12, and you know, the exchange rate was fabulous. So I don't remember how many clothes they brought on the way over, but they brought a lot of hard goods and stuff on the way back, including all sorts of WMF stuff. And my grandmother, even though she already had like two full sets of flatware, you know, for every day and the special occasions, when I was 12, she came back with another set of flatware. And I can still remember to this day when she opened up the box, lifted the lid, and here's this pattern. And I'm just like, and guess what? I ate lunch and breakfast with that pattern earlier today.
Yeah, geez. They don't make it like they used to, right?
So that's one thing, Elijah, that happened when I was 12, but mm-hmm. I also think it was either when I was 12 or 13 that my parents gifted me with my first Stendig calendar, and that, you know, awakened me to graphic design as well, and it was a similar spark. So it's ironic that, you know, that happened within like 6 months of, again, the flatware unveiling.
Yeah.
So I knew in high school, did a lot both on the academic side of things as well as the artistic side of things and athletic. But I can remember walking in and seeing a poster hung probably my junior year at some point in time, and it was loosely describing the visual arts. And I can remember seeing that poster. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's, I think I'd like to do that for my career. I had already, ironically, when I was 12 as well, I had made my first trip to Urbana-Champaign, and my mother will tell you to this day that I had made up my mind when I was 12 that I wanted to go to U of I. So I was glad to get in there. I entered as a general art major freshman year, and we weren't at that point in time as art and design majors, I should say. We weren't allowed to declare a major that first year. We had to kind of go through it on a rotating basis, like once a week, introducing us to all the different fields of study. And then I had it narrowed down to graphic design and industrial design. And because of the limitations of enrollment in those programs, you had to submit a portfolio. I submitted a portfolio to both. Got accepted into both, and then it's like, okay, I've got 3 days to decide the path that's going to be the rest of my life. Do I go with what the poster told me in high school, or do I go with this thing called industrial design, which frankly a lot of people to this day don't necessarily know what it is. And I chose industrial design. I thought with the added element of, you know, 3D on top of 2D. Granted, design is so much more than that now, but you know, that was my thought process, 2D versus 3D. I thought 3D would be more challenging. And so, that was my major for the remaining 3 years down in Champaign-Urbana. And
So you chose the more challenging or the less challenging one?
The more challenging.
Okay. Industrial design is what you went with.
Yes. And then one of the questions that you posed earlier, how it is that I, for instance, got into Herman Miller, that story is rooted in Urbana-Champaign as well. Mm-hmm. So my senior studio professor, you know, it's one instructor working with 35 of us or so over the course of the full academic year. So you get to know one another really quite well. And David, in addition to his teaching, had a consulting project going on at least for the duration of my senior year with Herman Miller. And so he would drive up to Michigan on a quarterly basis for a check-in and whatnot. And you know, that he did that on Fridays when we didn't have studios. So it was, you know, out of sight, out of mind. I graduated in May, and the economy was not too dissimilar from what it is today. It was not great. I came home to Chicagoland, moved back in with mom and dad, got caught up on sleep and all that stuff, and had a handful of interviews that I was able to land, and nothing beyond that, really, and frankly was sitting down to breakfast mid-morning on a Monday in August. And thinking, oh, that's the day that I'm gonna pick up the phone or drive over to see the guy at the custom mill workshop who had been my boss between junior and senior years, see if I can get on there because, you know, this is dragging on too much. And the phone rang, the phone on the wall rang. And I still remember it clearly. It was David calling me, and he's like, Gretchen, just, hey, how you doing? Do you have a job yet? And it was like this close to saying, gee, David, it's Monday at about 10 a.m. You just dialed me my parents' home number. And if I had a job, would I have that phone? But no, I all that was going through my head, but instead I just said, no, I don't. And so he went on to answer that with a follow-up, basically telling me, hey, I just had another one of those quarterly check-ins up at Herman Miller. The people that I go to meet with for my projects sit next to the research team within the broader R&D organization. And yes, they know that I teach at the university level. And they have an ongoing approximately year-long internship program within the research group. And their last intern has just left. He's going back to grad school himself. And they asked me, hey, are there any students that you think might be a good fit and interested in a role like blah, 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 blah. And he's like, Gretchen, I gave them one name. I don't know if you're interested.
Whoa, that's amazing.
That's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if you're interested, but and I don't know what you do exactly, but I can guarantee you'd learn a lot. So he's like, think about it. And I hung up the phone and I was kind of stunned because I wasn't expecting any of that particular morning. And furthermore, I'd never been in the state of Michigan before. And like, well, part of it is I need to understand where all this is. So within the hour, I jumped in the car and drove up there to check the place out. And as it turns out, I did not find the building that I would be working in another month or two later. But I drove back the same day and called David on Tuesday morning and said, yeah, I'm interested. So, you know, went through the whole interview process and the procedural side of things. And yes, came on board about 2 months after the first conversation, doing a range of things. Like David said, I don't know what you'll be doing. I was just, you know, filler. And then 4 months into that, the program that became the chair that Ross and I are sitting in was kicked off. And yeah. There were big, big questions tied to that. And so that fell into the research side of things. And it was what I was working on almost 100% of the time for the next, almost year and a half way of the internship and then Andy hiring me and so forth. And it was a fantastic learning experience beyond what David could have comprehended, perhaps, and certainly iconic beyond words.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a great first job.
Not bad. Not bad.
Yeah, that's a really great first job. I'm waiting for my teacher to send me that, give me that call.
So if the phone rings during this call, yeah. You're welcome to take it.
I better pick it up, I guess.
That's actually, I mean, there's a very small good lesson to that too, though, that I kind of have to remind myself there is like, when you answer the phone, you got to let those little voices run and be nice to whoever picks it up, no matter how you're feeling, because you never know, they might offer you a future on the other
end. And there's a lot of luck involved. I mean, yeah. If I would have had other luck earlier in the summer and he would have called and spoken with one of my parents and heard Gretchen's already working, you know, he would have reached out somewhere else. So I think the universe was sending me a signal. And, you know, I think now being on the backside of all that Herman Miller goodness for a year plus, I look at it and kind of like, yeah, you know what? It was like a marriage. What you want to put into a marriage in terms of you find compatibility beyond words. You find a lot of like values and an interest to grow together, and that's what I did and was committed to that marriage for a long while. And you know, when things were topsy and turvy here and there, I spoke up and we were able to get back on track, and things felt really good for a really long time. And that's so great. It's something that I'm very proud of and grateful for.
Yeah. I imagine that as a student going straight into Herman Miller, you have to kind of grow up a little bit kind of quickly. Do you feel like that's kind of where you developed a lot of your habits and kind of like work rituals that kind of helped you develop throughout your career?
Yeah, I mean, some of it is the corporate culture. Some of it, and this is an important thing. I'm glad you asked the question, Elijah. It goes back to the mention of play earlier, because literally then when I did get to the building for those interviews at Herman Miller, open the door, and the first thing that I walk into is a hallway, and it's got this neon sign hanging on the far wall, and the letters are all caps, about 12 inches tall, rainbow of neon, and it spells out playfulness, and you can see that image because it's the banner on my LinkedIn page today. But it's literally the first thing that I walked into at Herman Miller Corporate.
That's a great sign.
Yes, absolutely.
Literally.
So anyway, so that's the culture that I grew up in. And, you know, you're blessed, or at least I was, with a lot of good professional folks that, you know, whether they are formally mentoring you or you're just observing and taking away from them, like, that works nicely. It's what shaped my early career. And I was in career building mode for a handful of years, like we all are, and then kind of hit my stride and got to the point where, oh, now I'm the one helping mentor others.
This comes full circle. That's great. I mean, that's do you feel that serving others, I mean, that's a different aspect to your career. Do you feel more fulfilled doing that, or is that just a new great chapter for you? Describe that difference, I guess.
Well, you know, there are different layers to it. So yeah. I would say, so my answer to the question is, it's incredibly rewarding to look at the folks who literally are around the world today because they've gone back home to their native China or India or elsewhere in the world, including multiple locations throughout the US, that are, you know, if you will, not just my mentees, but the generation after me. And I've helped shape their career. And one of them phrases it in a very flattering way. He's made a few email introductions to folks to me. And he says something to the effect of, "Meet Gretchen. Gretchen knew me before I was X. And all of my weaknesses today are fewer because of her." And that's really special to hear. And it is rewarding, and it can be challenging at times, but like I teach some up at Northwestern, and classes are starting here in another few days, and I will be teaching first year engineering students. And it's like, you know, some of what I'm going to be teaching them is partly what my dad taught to decades of students of his in industrial arts, but like, you know, how to properly lay out an orthographic drawing. And it's like, you know, I've had the conversation or heard the pushback, you know what, I don't need to do those dimension lines. I you know, I'll just use this bracket or whatever. It's like, no, think about it. If you're a musician and you're communicating to another musician, you need to work within the protocol that has been established for centuries
right.
to get that music to be played correctly. Guess what? Same is true. It's just another language. It's the visual language here that is going to help communicate your design. So I'm looking forward to that element for sure.
Cool. That's very cool. I like this. This is like a one thing we ask a lot of our guests, and it's kind of cheesy, but it's fun. Have you had a I've made it moment?
Yeah, I was gonna ask that.
Have I had an I have made it moment? Yeah, I would say definitely. You know, I would go so far as to say I've had a few of them. I hate to go back repeatedly to the chair that we're sitting in. But I will. You know, when I could point to that, it happened to be the first thing. I can point to other things.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm working at trade shows or something like that, and I can say, "Yeah, I worked on that." That's one of those moments. I would say when I, within a week, graduated with my master's degree at Northwestern and was promoted to a director level position with true leadership responsibilities at Herman Miller. That was another one of the moments.
Right. Like they recognized your dedication and hard work and that you leveled up with your degree. That's cool.
Absolutely.
That's a great moment. So,
yeah, for sure.
That's awesome. Cubs win the World Series. Does that rank somewhere?
Yes. Very much so. Although that one was accompanied by tears of joy, part of it, I'm sure, was the drama of that seventh game. I waited for a long time to see that moment. And frankly, I incorporated in my storytelling today of my career evolution, because it's like, okay, so what changed a few years ago? You know what? The biggest goal in my life was accomplished. I had this much of a role in that grand scheme of things, but it happened. It's like, okay, what are we going to aim for next?
That's so funny. You know, my aunt shaved her head when they won the World Series.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, because she had the audacity to bet against the Cubs. And she's like, I'll shave my head if they win the World Series.
Too funny.
We're in a bar. She FaceTimed us as they shaved her head right after the Cubs won. So it was like, Cubs win a World Series, amazing, holy crap, and shaved her head.
Too funny.
Cool.
Gretchen, is there anything coming out that you'd like our viewers to know about, or anything that you're excited that's coming out like next year or so?
You're working on?
You know, there are a few things still back at Herman Miller that I had a hand in that should be making it to market within that time frame, as far as I know. But I don't have any insider scoop on that anymore. So I would say, theoretically, tune into NeoCon 2021, assuming that there is one again.
Yeah.
That's the trade show in Chicago. I'm excited about a couple of the preliminary project conversations that I've been having that, you know, might lead to, again, a couple of active gigs with clients. So we'll see there. And then just some of the student work is, you know, completely different scale or realm, but, you know, directionally, again, that way as well. And part of the fun there is, you know, the projects are very much outside of the furniture realm, as I talked about earlier. So the program has a number of projects that are sponsored through an affiliation of Northwestern's with the Shirley Ryan Ability Lab. So designing for people with temporary or long-term disabilities of various sorts. And I remember one of the classic examples that was given to me in the initial conversation around teaching was, how is it that you do an everyday activity? Well, not your aunt anymore, Ross, or at least but how do you tie your hair into a ponytail if you have use of only one hand or arm?
Yeah.
So they're designing solutions for situations like that are real.
Yeah, that's wild.
That's amazing.
That's very cool. I didn't say that. Well, you've got a lot of stuff happening. That's great. Elijah, do you have any other questions before we wrap this up?
Oh, thanks. I'm good. It's been great talking to you, Gretchen. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's always an interesting journey whenever we get a discussion going. We touch just about everything you and I have, just from design to, you know, crazy. Absolutely. Innovation and the Cubs and all that. It's always good.
you know, even though this isn't a question from you guys, I know we'd chatted about it a little bit as we were prepping for this hour or so. And it builds off your point, Ross. I've got a lot of stuff going on, but I think it's kind of rooted in the whole, hey, how can people pivot and so forth? And I think my master approach is, even though the last four letters of my name spell out idle, I find that I have a hard time doing that. So yes, I am doing the volunteer stuff and the gigs that we've talked about earlier. And one of the other things that I just joined for fun earlier in the calendar year was Toastmasters.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For public speaking and so forth. And I did it because although I felt relatively comfortable in the whole process, given both, you know, experience down in Illinois that flowed right into all my years at Herman Miller and beyond. I really saw a couple of friends go through their local clubs elsewhere in North America and saw them make tremendous strides. And it's like, well, you know what? That's an important skill set, public speaking. And I don't want to get rusty. So I did join my club and it's been really rewarding as well. And so I would say, you know, if you're one of those people that's like, oh my God, what am I going to do next? You know, that's maybe a nice little baby step that you want to take.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
It's probably a great networking tool a little bit too. Mm-hmm. You know, all these people that are trying to be professional and win their Zoom calls, you know, like, because you have to, I mean, public speaking is now more on the spot than ever because you are alone in a room with a computer.
Yeah. And it's not just, you know, the words that come out of your mouth, it's how they come out of your mouth and with what conviction and what you do, yeah, hand gesture wise, and how you use your stage, and you can do all that on Zoom as well, and it makes a difference, I think, so.
Well, that's cool. That's great advice, I think. So, Elijah, do you got that?
Yeah, I'm definitely.
Join Toastmasters, get a better chair, always be playful.
Perfect. Those sound like honestly really great.
Sounds real good.
All right. Well, thanks again for joining us. Have a really good day.
Thank you so much.
Nice meeting you, Gretchen.
Yeah. Thank you, Elijah. Great to meet you. Say hi at home for me. And thanks. I really enjoyed this time together as well.
This podcast is sponsored by Clever Editing. The difference between good content and great content is a little clever editing. Get a quote today at cleverediting.com.